Greetings! Greetings, once again! That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to a special Monday edition of the show. We don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do all kinds of other stuff. We usually do it on the weekend, but we're doing it on Monday because we had technical difficulties is what it was. And then I couldn't be with you last weekend. And not because it was Easter weekend, because we acknowledge and often celebrate the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ here at the McBurney compound on a daily basis. So Easter is extraneous. Easter is superfluous. We generally don't participate. Except for the chocolate. All the other trappings, the bunnies, the eggs, the all of that, no. So it was that I had a cold. I had a cold and I've been in the throes of a virus for several weeks. And even yesterday, a lot of the technical difficulties were related to the fact that I was having a hard time speaking and thinking due to the illness. And so I feel recovered enough today to begin in the bad religion file, where we start in England, where a pastor named Cheryl, oh, I know, that's why it's in the bad religion file. A pastor named Cheryl has been charged with gross, gross negligence manslaughter, which I think is the worst kind of manslaughter. Cheryl has been charged with gross negligence manslaughter following the death of Robert Smith, who died during a baptism ceremony being officiated and carried out by Cheryl. Robert ended up carried out is what happened. And we don't know if it was because Cheryl was being a girl. She might have been a little too weak and she dropped him in the bath and wasn't able to get his head above water. We don't know exactly what happened. She might have been like one of those girl fireman trainees who's trying to carry the sandbag up over her shoulder and she slips and falls down the stairs. But we don't know. We know that Cheryl wasn't qualified to be a pastor, her being a girl and all. But we don't know if it was her upper body strength that led to the unfortunate passing of Robert Smith. Now, the other thing about Mr. Smith, according to the report that came across Yahoo.com, which used to be called the Associated Press, I think, Robert Smith had already been baptized. He had already been dipped once in his Christian career, but he wanted a second ceremony so he could become a born-again believer. You get it? Born again, which... So to do that, obviously, you need to get baptized twice. I mean, maybe it's not so obvious. Maybe someone had to kind of talk him into it with. So listen, this is a good cautionary tale. Just because someone has pastor on their badge there and their name is Cheryl, just don't necessarily believe that they can lead you in the right direction towards becoming born again or being a believer or even surviving the baptism. Just be careful. Cheryl serves at the Apostolic Church, which is a classical Pentecostal denomination, which means they generally do not understand the gospel. We got to hope that someone got the gospel to Robert Smith before they got him killed with the secondary baptism that he thought he needed. I hope he didn't think he needed that to go to heaven. But he might have. Anyway, so demerits for Cheryl. Hopefully she's getting run out of town on a rail. But all right, so that's the bad religion file where we open it. And then from religion, we go to politics. So we like to start with the two topics that your mom said you should never discuss in polite company. We go from religion to politics where we check back in with the Cesar Chavez story. You remember last time we were together, I was somewhat nonplussed as to how fast a bunch of rich white politicians could throw a Mexican under the bus with the Cesar Chavez. As soon as the first story, the hint of the first story came out that Cesar Chavez might have been not so nice to one girl, maybe, in 1968, they were tearing his name off statues, tearing down statues, blowing up bridges that were taking his name off the bridge. Every, you name it, they threw him under the bus so fast. I was shocked. Little did I know what was going on in the background, that the table was simply being set for one Eric Swalwell. That's right. I didn't see that coming because I'm not familiar with the Democrat machinations behind the scenes in the state of California, but this was obviously all set up by Nancy Pelosi and her mobbed-up nephew, Gavin, and the whole crew running the state of California, the criminally insane gang of perverts. So they decided we got to get the Me Too machine running. So they kicked it into gear and they got it chugging and huffing and puffing and they fed in Cesar Chavez. And boy, they didn't, even they probably didn't realize how fast they would kick the Me Too machine into high gear. Because it chewed up and spit out Cesar Chavez before the ink was dry on the first newspaper story that he may have been less than a gentleman with, That happened so fast. And then, so by the time they fed Swalwell into it, which I think started last week at some point, by the time they fed him into it, it was like a wood chipper just zipped, sucked him right through, and that guy was gone. Man, I'll tell you what. When those Democrats want one of their own politically dead, get out of the way. Because first of all, they'll kill whoever it takes. And I'm speaking politically. So they'll assassinate Cesar Chavez in 5 seconds if they think it'll help them for 5 minutes in the next election. They're positively satanic. And Eric Swalwell, I don't know much about the guy. I know he was one of these Trump derangement guys. And he always looks like, I don't know. He always looks like he just climbed out of a dumpster. His outfit is always somewhat disheveled. He's always got the 5 o'clock shadow. He looks like he has a film on his teeth. He always just struck me as just dirty. That's all. Just, I mean, even if he had been on my side, like if he had come to my church, I would have said, "Hey, man, clean yourself up a little bit," is all. Even if I agree with you, you know, but Eric and I would not have gotten along. In fact, let's go to the damnable politics file where we check in with Stephen Klubeck. Are you familiar with Stephen Klubeck? He asked. He's extremely attractive. Audio. She had to choke back.
No, I don't know.
Just at the mention of Klubeck's name, she was. Well, listen to this. Eric Klubeck is a timeshare mogul. Are any of you familiar with timeshares? Do you have any friends who've bought into a timeshare? Yeah, a timeshare mogul is someone who professionally lies and steals money from people. Now, they're generally gullible, foolish people making bad decisions at bad times in their lives, often under the influence of drugs or alcohol or adultery. So we understand how timeshares end up happening, generally. But the guy who's running the company that does the timeshares, one of the lowest forms of human filth and scum on the planet, and that's this guy, Stephen Klubeck. Well, for whatever reason, yeah, what was his name here? Eric Swalwell was crashing at Klubeck's house. Klubeck has kicked Swalwell out of his house. So you might ask, isn't Eric Swalwell married with 3 children? What's he doing staying at the mansion of a lowlife like Stephen Klubeck? How low is Stephen Klubeck? His live-in girlfriend, who he calls his fiancé. Huh? Right? You're familiar with that one these days, right? Everybody's a fiancé. Uh-huh. Yeah, I have a couple of associates. They started shacking up about 6 months ago. And she's been his fiance ever since. And we're all supposed to just go along with it, by the way. I don't. I say something. Like, oh, do you have a date in mind? Make them both real uncomfortable. Oh, you haven't even talked about a date. Oh, that's because you're just saying fiancé, so you don't have to say that we're shacking up like a couple of Alabama. I shouldn't even say Alabama. People in Alabama don't shack up any more or any less than people in California, Illinois, or, well, probably less than people in California. Probably less than Democrats in Cal. That's right. We don't want to admit that we're shacked up like a couple of Democrat political leaders in the valley or whatever it is up there. But Klubeck is, oh, that's why I want to get to his fiance. His fiance has been accused of burglarizing the homes in the neighborhood where Klubeck has his mansion. His girlfriend's breaking into other people's houses, stealing stuff. That's the accusation. We don't know if it's true, but keep in mind, he is a timeshare mogul, and he's a flaming froth-at-the-mouth leftist, although now he says he's not a leftist, he's not even a Democrat anymore. Now he claims he's a libertarian, this fellow Klubeck. Now listen, and he's kicked Swalwell out of his house, and nobody has asked Swalwell, well, what's the deal? Where's your wife and kids in, like, the house that you lived in that you put that Easter thing up on? Just a couple weekends ago, you said happy Easter, everybody, for me and my loving family. And there's a picture of you and your kids and your wife in the house. And where's that house? Well, nobody asked Eric Swalwell, because the sad fact is nobody cares, because Eric Swalwell suddenly doesn't matter. That's got to be a pretty rough way to wake up and realize that you literally had tens of thousands of people ready to defend you to the death for the better part of the last 5 years. And suddenly they all throw you away like your last week's lunch. Yeah, they throw you away like you're that outfit that you're wearing right now that you look. So Eric Swalwell, he's been kicked out by the timeshare mogul Klubeck. This is just the kind of guy Swalwell deserves in a time of personal and political crisis. So, you know, you reap what you sow, you lay down with the dogs, you wake up with the fleas, all of that, right? I have a line here. Klubeck gave an interview after allegedly kicking Swalwell out of his mansion. We got to keep in mind, this guy is a timeshare mogul. So you can't believe anything he says at any time, even if it agrees with what you think you see with your own eyes. You need to be suspicious of Mr. Klubeck. For all we know, Klubeck is staying at Swalwell's house, and Klubeck doesn't have three nickels to rub together. And Eric Swalwell is the one. Yeah, we just don't know. Listen to what Klubeck says about himself. When asked, why is Eric Swalwell staying at your house? You know, him being married with three kids and all. And a very successful politician. And why is he staying at your house? Klubeck answered by referring to himself. He ignored the existence of Eric Swalwell, like everyone else is preparing to do now. And Klubeck said, well, I have a lot of people who stay at my house. A lot of people. You know, I built a gorgeous place. It's my dream home. I relish it. And I'm a very generous man. I'm very thoughtful. And I'm very kind. Wow. Unquote.
Nice.
Says the timeshare mogul with a straight face. This is how you become a timeshare mogul. You have to be able to say something that arrogant with a straight face, and then you better have enough money so nobody calls you on it. Because if you don't have hundreds of millions of dollars, you can't say that in polite company without someone saying, well, wait a second, Mr. Klubeck. You're not supposed to say that you're thoughtful and kind. Other people are supposed to notice that about you and say that about you. It's not polite to say that about yourself, Mr. Klubeck. Did I mention I have a timeshare available? I could listen to that. That's so much, so much nicer than thinking about poor Eric Swalwell. For all we know, he's walking on a sidewalk in Los Angeles with no shoes right now. That could be. I know.
It fits right in.
It fits right in with the look that he had going there, but who knows what's happened to him. But yeah, he'll be back around, I'm sure. In the meantime, I want to go to the story with the most potential for historical impact. Of all the stories this week, this one holds the potential for the most historic impact on the rest of your lives. And that is the story out of China, where reporters on the space of military weaponry are reporting that China is now manufacturing short-range, low-cost kamikaze drones priced under $500 per unit. So this means, and this all comes out of the Ukraine war. It comes out of the Middle East terrorist environment and the Ukraine war, where drones have now been developed that are frankly terrifying. This new drone, which they call the Baby Shahed, that's named after the Iranian drone that was allegedly invented by the Iranians and the Russians and the Chinese and whoever all was in on it to invent a cheap drone that they could crash through like the window of your house and kill you. That because they're terrorists. And it turns out they've been able to do it, and now they're mass producing them. And the Baby Shahed costs about $450 to build. It has a range of 10 or 20 miles, flies about 120 miles an hour. It can be launched by hand or from a rack, from a box truck, from a shipping container, off the back of a tricycle. Anyway, these type of drones have become critical, according to Zero Hedge, in the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war, because their low-cost maneuverability is valuable, and the ability to swarm, to literally send tens, dozens, hundreds of these drones to make intercepting them and stopping an attack virtually impossible just by sheer volume of the number of drones. At $500 a pop, you could throw a lot of drones. Like one Tomahawk missile is, I don't know, $12 million. So that's like, how I don't know how many of these drones that is. It's like hundreds of thousands of these drones. It's terrifying. Countries seeking to deter these drones will likely have to stockpile these drones by the millions and the tens of millions. How do you defeat a 100,000 drone swarm with a million? I guess, I don't know. If you thought the Cold War nuclear race was insane, what the drone race looks to give it a run for its money as far as level of insanity. Although supposedly lasers are going to solve the problem, until lasers become a problem, we find out, oh wait, now they can put a laser on a drone, they can shoot us with lasers. And just this definitely holds the most potential for historic impact on the rest of your life, as terrorists continue to develop cheaper, more efficient ways of killing and terrorizing their fellow human being. Let's see. The Zero Hedge reports, the economics of war changing forever. Cheap one-way attack drones and low-cost interceptor drones seem to be the future. And in the last 6 weeks, they remind us, during the assault on Iran, these one-way attack drones exposed glaring security gaps at U.S. bases. You haven't heard much about this, which is appropriate, but there have been some very successful suicide drone attacks on American bases, and it does not bode well for... All right, but that's bad news. We don't want to hear about that because... Well, we do want to hear about it, but we don't want to dwell on it. Let's go instead now to Chick-fil-A. Hey, that'll put a smile on your face, right? Go to Chick-fil-A with the deep-fried chicken breast with pickles and a chocolate milkshake. We'll go to Chick-fil-A, where we're going to check in with Jaden Cintron, who is a human being who lives in North Carolina. He happens to work at Chick-fil-A, and he happened to find $9,333 in cash in two bank envelopes left behind in the bathroom at the Chick-fil-A where he happened to be working. What did the young man do? He waited until the owner came back, the owner of the cash came back, and was obviously concerned and quite disoriented and freaked out. And Jaden Cintron gave the man back the $9,333 in cash that he found in the bathroom. And so everyone is showering praise down on Jaden Cintron. And he lands this week in the serviceable religion file. That's right. This is just serviceable religion. If you believe in God, you should not take a big bunch of cash that obviously was just left behind in the bathroom. And so Jaden did the right thing. Jaden is just an 18-year-old young man. And he explained when asked by reporters asked him, "Why didn't you keep the money?" At which point he said, "Man, what's your problem? You're a sick, twisted. Why would you even think about keeping the money? How can you even ask me how could I keep the money? You need to check yourself." We don't know if Jaden said that to the reporter. But just the fact that he didn't take the money makes reporters feel very bad. And hopefully they check themselves. He said, quote, "That's not what Jesus would have done. That's not what God would have wanted," unquote. That's right. So that's not what God would have wanted. Certainly that's not what God would have wanted. Jesus probably wouldn't have been in a Chick-fil-A. So Jaden, obviously he's a mainline denominational Christian, and he thinks that his life needs to imitate what Jesus does. And that's a mistake, but that's not as bad as stealing the money. What Jaden needs to do is read his Bible more. Right now he's in the serviceable range. He doesn't steal money. He understands that God doesn't want him to steal money. That's serviceable. But he thinks he needs to imitate Jesus. That's somewhat off the mark, but not as bad as the reporter who said, "Hey, kid, why didn't you take the money?" And it's also not as bad as the reporters, the journalists at the Liberty Daily, who claimed in this article that Jaden Cintron was, quote, a Chick-fil-A worker, unquote. I'm sorry, this is not the Liberty Daily. They borrowed this from World Net Daily. This is Bob Unruh. Bob Unruh? Bobby! Did the journalist get to you too? Bobby, Jaden Cintron is not a Chick-fil-A worker. In fact, none of us are workers. I mean, unless you're a communist. Are you writing for the People's Daily, Bob? What? But I think that journalism and the leftist mentality has so impregnated the minds of the modern human being, especially the modern journalist or anyone who tries to write or think, has been corrupted by the leftist propaganda that's fed through everything all the time. Bob Unruh probably doesn't realize that by calling Jaden Cintron a Chick-fil-A worker, he's basically giving in to the communist construct that alleges that a human being can be reduced to a description as vile as a mere worker. Jaden's not a worker. He's not a Chick-fil-A worker. He's a human being. He happens to be a Christian. He's not a thief. All right. So there we have Jaden at the Chick-fil-A giving us some hope for the future of civilization and some hope that humanity still exists. And, but then there's the Chick-fil-A out in New Jersey. Not to put a bad face on New Jersey. They don't need any help in that regard. Union City, New Jersey, maniac goes into a Chick-fil-A, murders one person, shoots five or six others so far. Listen to how this is reported. The incident occurred at 8:40 p.m. at a Chick-fil-A location along Route 22, where a barrage of gunfire erupted. Inside, really, a barrage of gunfire erupted. At least six people were shot. One victim was pronounced dead at the scene. All right, so at last count, there was one Chick-fil-A that gave us hope, and then there's another Chick-fil-A that dashed that hope. And that's why we don't have a whole lot of hope in this world. Not in this world, anyway. All right, I have a note here about Christy Noem's husband. I can't speak to that issue. It's just too... I mean, you should talk about needing a shower or disinfection or an antibiotic. I'm not even going to address that story. I feel very badly for the children of the couple. That's all. Those two probably, I don't know. Anyway, I'm not going to speak to it. In fact, let's go to the multiverse. It's easier for me to comprehend the multiverse than what's going on there at Christy Noem's house. So this came across my average moron Yahoo feed that I check in with daily to see what the average moron sees. And Yahoo knows that I read science stories, so they are constantly feeding me average moron, fake, phony science articles. And then this one came in this week. It's in the dumbed all the way down file, because if you were a urinalist dumbing things down and you dumb them all the way down, this is the article you would write. And of course, it would be about the multiverse. Here's the headline. Are multiverses real? It depends on how you define real, and then real is in quotation marks. Okay, so there you go. The author begins, the idea of the multiverse, a hypothetical collection of all possible universes, is one people love to explore, but does the multiverse actually exist? So let's just stop right there and look at this from a dumbed down perspective. First of all, the headline said, are multiverses real? And then the first sentence in the article asks if the multiverse is real. So you don't know if the multiverse is one thing or if it's many things or how do we define it? We don't even know what it's called. And then secondly, the author says the multiverse is a hypothetical question and then asks, is it real? Does it exist? Well, do you understand what hypothetical means? You just said it was hypothetical. Hypothetical, which means beneath the level of a theory. Hypothetical, by definition, means it's not real. When I tell you I have a hypothetical situation, I'm telling you it's not real, but consider it hypothetically for an exercise. Okay. The author then goes on. After asking, does the multiverse or multiverses actually exist? We first need to agree on what it means for something to be real. Is the multiverse real? We first need to agree on what it means is something real. Well, I think first we need to agree on what it means to be hypothetical. Then we could move on to reality do you want to jump ahead to reality without even, okay, well, we'll go ahead and this is from the dumbed all the way down file. The author goes on to say, real might be defined as something you can perceive with at least one of your five senses, but that would leave out a lot of things that are also like real, you know, like dinosaurs. Like dinosaurs, right? I mean, you can't see dinosaurs, huh? You can only see their fossils. Okay, well, let's stop right there, because if we can see their fossils, then we are using one of our five senses. So that's just a really bad example of whatever point you were trying to make. But then we go on. She goes on. I'm assuming it's a girl. I probably shouldn't do that, but okay. No, oh, no. Let's assume it's AI. That way I don't offend anyone. This is just AI, and AI we know is not really all that sharp yet. The author goes on, is there any evidence of the multiverse or multiverse's effects? Maybe you can see them, maybe you can't. There are lots of real things that aren't real in this sense, you know, like microwaves. can we see any indirect evidence of the multiverse? Well, maybe, maybe not. They're like microwaves, which, by the way, if you put this author in a microwave, the author would feel with one of her five senses the microwaves as her body heated up and then bloated and then exploded inside the microwave oven. But so another really bad example of something that we can't see or sense with our five senses is the multiverse real? Let's go to the end of the article. She finally says, the short answer is yes, sort of. At which point, you just want to just slap her with a very heavy dictionary, probably. She then goes on, the multiverse is one way to understand blah, 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 blah. Whatever it is, she might maybe understand one way. So just a note to the author and to anyone who's on the Average Moron Yahoo feed. There are different ways to perceive. There are different ways to measure. And there are different ways to observe. But there's only one way to understand, okay? There's not many ways to understand. You don't. You either understand or you don't, okay? That's, I don't want to, you either understand or you don't understand. Introducing the idea that there's more than one way to understand is, at the very least, it's stupid. It's more than likely deceptive. It's quite possibly evil. There is only one reality evident. And it is evidenced by things that we can't see. I would agree with the author on that, but I would use better examples like truth, love, loyalty. These are things that we can't perceive with any one of our five senses, but they are absolutely real. Well, I mean, they're at least real in the life of someone who's rational. And maybe this author doesn't qualify. It's the Weekly Worldview. That's right. And we're back, and glad to have you sticking with us. And we have to, since we weren't able to make it on Easter Sunday because of the cold and all of that, we have a story here. Donald Trump published a letter from Franklin Graham. I think he published it on Good Friday, or it might have been Spy Wednesday. I can't remember, or was it Taco Tuesday? It was sometime during what they call Holy Week. There. And this was a letter from Franklin Graham because Franklin has been concerned about Don. let's attribute to Franklin Graham the best of intentions, the best of motives. Frank is worried that Don might be going to hell. Now, he didn't say that, but he did respond to Donald's assertion in an interview recently. Donald was asked, are you going to go to heaven? And he said, quote, I don't think there's anything that's going to get me in heaven. I really don't. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it to heaven. Unquote. Trump then went on to say, I might be in heaven right now here on Air Force One. This might be heaven. And I've done all these wonderful things for all these wonderful people, these great Americans, and everything's great. And so Franklin Graham hears that. And quite naturally and logically assumes Donald Trump's on his way straight to hell with jet rockets. I need to do something about it, which is laudable for Franklin Graham. So Franklin sent a letter. This is back in October, by the way, October of 2025. Franklin sent a letter to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump posted that letter on either Good Friday or Spy Wednesday. Or there's Black Saturday, and am I forgetting? Isn't there a Thursday or a Monday with the washing of the feet? Wednesday. I can't remember. Oh, there's Ash Wednesday. I'm not sure if that's part of. It might go back too far. And then, isn't there the washing of the feet? I forget what they call that. It's not good or bad. They call it something else. But Anyway, they got a whole thing they do for all, like a whole week. And then after that, they just go back to whatever it is they were doing. But anyway, Donald Trump posted the letter. The letter sent last October was shared by the president. Oh, I'm sorry, on Palm Sunday. Palm Sunday, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the Sunday before Easter Sunday, celebrating the so-called triumphal entry, which don't even get me started on that. Here's what Frank said to Don. Don, the only one who can save us from hell is Jesus Christ. That's a pretty good start right there for Frank. Frank says, you can't save yourself. I can't save myself. That's pretty good, Frank. He's on a roll. And then Frank continues. Don, God requires us to right there, I'm like, oh, God requires us. Frank, you were on a roll, baby. Maybe you should have just stopped while you... Don, God requires us to turn from our sins and by faith, believe in our heart that Jesus came to the earth, died on the cross for our sins, was buried, and God raised him to life on the third day. If you accept that by faith and invite him in to come into your heart, you are heaven bound. My goodness, Frank. God requires us by faith. So that's a little confusing, Frank, because if there's a requirement, that seems like I have to do that, which that wouldn't be by faith. But, you know, let's not dig too deeply into Frank's theology, because Franklin Graham is a product of his father, Billy Graham, who was relatively confused about the gospel. And he did get a lot of people to do an altar call and come up to the front and do that whole thing. How many of them actually got saved? I'm not sure. Because Franklin Graham never preached. Did I say Franklin? Billy Graham never preached the actual gospel of grace, which is all you have to do is believe. You don't have to come up here. You don't have to get down, close your eyes. You don't have to repent of your sins. All you have to do is believe that God will forgive you for your sins, and he will. And you'll be saved and you won't go to hell. He never preached that. So now it is in the Bible. So a lot of people who Frank got their attention, Billy got their attention, they probably read later and they figured it out so that they won't end up roasting and frying in hell forever. But now very few people have tried to even talk to Don about this. And now Don is thinking that God requires him to turn from his sins. Donald doesn't think he has any sins, number one. I've heard him say that. At least none that are bad enough, you know, for God to be upset about. Now that God requires him to do, well, whatever God requires, I can assure you Don understands that he's done that. Don's met all the requirements, Frank. So you probably should have left that part out. Anyway, Frank says, I promise you, the Bible says you're heaven bound. You will be saved. If you confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord, believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead. So I just want to let people know that you can confess with your mouth that Jesus is Lord. You can say that. And you can believe in your heart that God raised Jesus from the dead. And you can still go to hell. I just want you to know that. Because the devil says that, and the devil believes that, and he's going to hell. So just be careful with Romans 10:9. That's probably not the best place to end the whole Romans road. It's probably needs to veer up into Ephesians or something. But just be careful with that. Anyway, Donald Trump was probably pondering and thinking about what does this mean, and he may have come as close as he's ever come to actually understanding that there's a God that's greater than him and that he's a sinner and he needs God to forgive him. He needs God to do everything. He needs God. I can't do anything without God, Don almost said. He could have said. He was right there. He was at the precipice of it. But then he got a note from Gary Bauer. Gary Bauer, who looks exactly like a demonic hecubus of Satan. And he happened to run the Christian Coalition in the 80s, which, I mean, you take that for what it's worth. That's all, okay? Gary Bauer chimed in saying, Donald Trump, by posting this letter on social media, the president shared the gospel message with our entire nation. President Trump has done more to advance the gospel and to protect religious liberty than any other president in our history. And I believe, Gary Bauer says, he has accepted Jesus Christ as his Lord and Savior, and he is, in fact, heaven-bound. It's like he stamps Donald's passport. Gary Bauer is going to let Donald Trump into heaven. So let me just say, Don, if I could have your ear for a moment, having Gary Bauer stamp your passport into heaven, I mean, that's kind of like staying at a timeshare mogul's house. Just, I wouldn't rely on that too much, okay? Now that Franklin Graham hopefully has your attention, I would crack open a Bible and I would start reading. Preferably start with Ephesians, Don. Not with anything Gary Bauer has written. Not with anything Franklin Graham has preached. Not with anything his daddy Billy said. Because they're all relatively confused. I tell you, folks, the more I study the Bible, the more convinced I become that almost everyone, including me, has gotten almost everything wrong almost all the time, going back the whole time. And that's why we just need to, you know what, God? You got this. Yeah, I have to hand this over to you, God. I can't do it. I can't figure it out. I don't know what's going on. I can't help myself. I'm incapable of helping other people. We need you. I throw myself on the mercy of the Creator because it's all way too big and complicated for me. And obviously, it keeps Franklin Graham and Gary Bauer confused. And we'll pray for them. God bless them. I pity them. Meanwhile, I also pity people who live in Texas. Not only because of the summer, right? And the whole barren wasteland, that whole thing. I mean, you go from swamps to a barren wasteland. That's the whole place is Texas. But then I feel badly because Texas is one of the most fake, phony religious places in history. And let me just give you an example of that. This is reason number 2026 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Texas education officials. Here's the story from the Daily Signal. It starts out, Texas education officials are considering, and right there, any real Texan would stop. Now, I lived in Texas for about 9 years. I'm not a Texan, but I know what real Texans are. Oh, because I met them. And just Texas education officials are, okay, stop right there. Any real Texan would say, we shouldn't have none of those. What's that? Texas education official? Huh? No. We ain't got none of those. This is Texas. What are you talking about? Get back up there, Yankee. Get up there above the... Get up over the Red River with all that, Yankee. We don't got no education officials. This is Texas, for crying out loud. Okay. let me just say I agree with the Texan that we shouldn't have... education officials in Texas or anywhere else, frankly. And when someone says they're an education official, you should be very suspicious, quite possibly terrified of what they might do. What are they doing in Texas? They're considering adding passages and books from the Bible to required reading lists for students. Yeah. And you know what that means? That means someone other than the student's parents are giving the student a required reading list, which any real Texan would be like, wait a second, what'd you say? You gonna tell my boy what to read? Get on out of here. Don't let the door hit you. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. Just keep moving with that. But no, here's what's going on. There's a reading list from the Texas State Board of Education. Wait a second. What'd you say? A state board? Get on out of here with that. I'll pull your boots off and put them over your head with all that. Come on now. A state board of education. Uh-huh. Yeah, they have one of those in Texas. And they say that they are going to include selections from the book of Jonah, the story of David and Goliath, 1 Samuel, the story of the Tower of Babel. We call it Babel in Texas. I know you Yankees say Babel, but that's because y'all talk that way. So this is what happens when you're born in Buffalo, born in South Buffalo like me, but you grew up in West Texas, is that you start talking Texan and then suddenly you're talking like a Texan because at one point you had to talk that way, mostly to avoid being beat up. I only adopted the Southern drawl so that they would stop beating me up and making fun of me. But sometimes I slip back into, that's right, we call it the Tower of Babel. You got a problem with that? Tell your story walking. They're also going to include chapter 3 of the Book of Lamentations, according to the State Board of Education. That's right. They are also considering the prodigal son, the parable of the prodigal son, for first grade. They're going to recommend the Road to Damascus for third graders, and Ecclesiastes and possibly the Book of Job for high school English. Yes. This is all happening because back in 2023, the Texas legislature passed a law that requires at least one Bible reading per grade, K through 12. What that means, if your kid goes to the government schools in Texas, they will be exposed possibly to as many as 12 verses, perhaps chapters of the Bible in their 12-year career. The reporters at the Daily Signal put in a phone call to what's called the Texas Education Agency. Huh? Agents? We got an agency for education in the state of Texas? I don't think so. I don't think we got an agency. I think you better get on out of here with that. But they have one of those. The agency hadn't gotten back to the Daily Signal regarding all this. Anyway, this Texas Education Agency, that's the governing office body or whatever it is there that is supposed to implement this, what we could only call this what it is. It's a deception. So this can only serve to dress up the government school, which is a temple of false gods and false teachings and lies and deceptions and dangerous evil and wickedness. This is designed to dress it up in a little bit of religious garb so that the parents can continue to play church and play Christian while still sacrificing their children down at the government temple. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I wanted to get in there because they have like the rattlesnake. Get that? it's almost like being out in Texas there. That's right. We had a rattlesnake that bit our dog, but that's a whole nother. So the rattlesnake bit our dog, and then our daughter chopped the snake in half. And then they took the dog to the vet, and the whole time I'm freaking out saying, you got to take the snake. You got to take the snake. The doctor says you got to bring the snake. Turns out that's a myth. It may or may not have been true decades ago when I first heard, well, if you get bit by a snake, be sure to take the snake. You don't need the snake. I don't know. They make the venom somewhere else now. It's a synthetic, anyway. So if you get bit by a snake, it's okay to cut the snake in half, and you don't have to bring it to the doctor. That snake is, by the way, still in the freezer. I just remembered. Oh, okay. So we got to take that. Maybe we'll eat that snake. I don't know. No? All right. Speaking of a snake, Let's go to the Dastardly Politics File, where we check in with Nancy Pelosi, who, in between efforts to throw, what's his, that guy? I got a mental block against that guy's name, Swalwell. Eric Swalwell. For whatever reason, I can never think of the guy's name. I can picture his unshaven face and his disheveled outfit, but I have a thing against his name. I don't know what it is. I don't think I've talked about him ever on the air. I don't think. Maybe. Probably never. I've ever mentioned his name until now when his career implodes for the moment. Anyway, Nancy Pelosi, in between throwing her non-blood relative, by the way, Eric Swalwell, under the bus, she stopped to give an interview with MS Now, which is MSNBC, became MS.Now because I don't know why. It's like if you run auto mechanics or if you run a used car dealership and you get a reputation for being a sleazebag, lying thief, you just change the name and then you just keep doing the same thing and you change from a blue plaid sport coat into a red plaid sport coat. You do a new commercial and you just keep doing your thing until you run off of that corner. And that's MSNBC. Does anyone remember, by the way? I remember when MSNBC became a thing, it was Microsoft and MSNBC, back when the internet was new, they teamed up to bring nonstop internet news to, and I don't know what exactly happened. It turns out Bill Gates was an insane leftist, and the whole thing just degenerated into a bizarre leftist echo chamber. And now they've changed the name of it because pretty much nobody could stand it anymore. There were a few post-abortive 40-something white women who could turn it on, but that was it. And, I mean, you're just not going to sell a whole lot of Crisco and muffins and dish soap to post-abortive 40-something, 60-something. I'm getting older. 60-something. Anyway, so now it's MS Now, and they have a... Let's see, Breitbart says they have a reporter named Ali Vitali. So color me skeptical. I just don't think Ali Vitali is even a real human being. I mean, the name sounds like a made-up AI bot. And by the way, MS Now, that doesn't sound real either. I'm not buying that MSNBC even exists anymore. Somebody was losing so much money, they found a way to just tank the whole thing and then put it on autoplay via AI. And that's what's happening now. And so Nancy Pelosi goes down, gives an interview. The AI-generated Ali Vitali asks Nancy, quote, "I think if we look ahead to the midterm elections in 2026, you talk about the fact that you are confident that Democrats will retake the House. But I wonder if you have concerns about the midterm elections themselves." Unquote. At which point, let's just stop and analyze this for a second. Okay, first he says, you're confident you're going to retake the House. But are you concerned about the elections themselves? It's like, well, what exactly? Are you sure Nancy didn't write this question for you, Allie? Because it's almost as if that question was designed to elicit a specific answer. Color me skeptical, but maybe I'm just that way. Nancy answers, if this was even Nancy Pelosi, if she's even alive anymore. Somebody was losing a lot on her and finally figured out a way to regenerate that, reanimate that via AI. And boy, that'd be a load off of somebody's mind. Pelosi answered, "We always have concerns. We have to be on guard. They may try to creep into the technology and create a false count." Oh! What? What did she just say? A false count? Isn't there a lady in prison in Colorado for saying that exact same thing? Tina Peters? Aunt Tina had like evidence that it was that they had actually done that. Tina Peters had the technology with the evidence of all the creeping. And she's in prison. And Nancy Pelosi's on MSNBC. So that's the definition of irony. So the girl who wrote the article earlier who didn't know what hypothetical meant, if you figure out what hypothetical meant means, then you can come and you can start working on irony. And you can start right here, the fact that Nancy Pelosi... By the way, Nancy, methinks your description of the threat is just a little too detailed. It's almost as if, Nancy, maybe you've done some creeping yourself into various technologies and maybe even created false counts, perhaps, maybe, Nancy. Is that possible? Because how would you say something that specific, that creep into technology, create a false count? Anyway, I can't wait till Tina Peters gets out of jail and she's able to actually have investigators look through the evidence she has that the election in 2020 was so obviously rigged and stolen in front of God and everybody. The fact that we're not able to talk about that, I remember when it happened. The fact that all the major allegedly right-wing talk show hosts refused to say it, that told me, man, something is, this has really changed everything. COVID definitely changed everything. It altered the landscape to, it was like an earthquake. Because when an election was so obviously stolen, and then Rush Limbaugh wouldn't talk about it, Sean Ponvanity wouldn't talk about it, Mark Levin wouldn't talk about it, Bongino wouldn't talk about it. I could go through the list. Laura Ingraham wouldn't talk about it. Nobody would say, look, this was so obviously stolen. I don't think anybody said it, did they? I can't remember anybody. And I was somewhat... anyway, this is a wake-up call, that's all. It was a wake-up call that let me know that I need to start paying attention to something other than a bunch of lemmings arguing over politics. And really, the more important thing for them is funding their retirement and getting advertisers and selling toothpaste and funding their retirement. That's more important because you should have been able to grab that third rail and sacrifice your career. And none of them did because, well, they're all cowards. That's all. Meanwhile, speaking of creeping into technology and altering votes, Judicial Watch has just settled a civil lawsuit with the state of Colorado. And Colorado has agreed to remove almost 400,000 what they call outdated registrations from the voter rolls. Judicial Watch reports this as a massive step toward cleaner elections. So this is from Judicial Watch's website. And so let me just go through this real quick. 400,000 in Colorado. Kentucky, 735,000. Judicial Watch settled a lawsuit with Kentucky. Kentucky agreed to remove 750,000 fake voters. They say that they were just ineligible, excessive, errant. I'm going to say fake voters have been now removed. 735,400. Let's see. New York City. New York City alone, almost 1 million fake voters on the rolls. They settled with Judicial Watch. They say they're removing them. Los Angeles, 1.2 million fake voters allegedly removed from the rolls after a settlement with Judicial Watch. Further in Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Ohio coming up. Judicial Watch says it's going to get them to settle in Oregon, Illinois as well. So I have to stop, and first of all, the numbers here are quite stunning. Having pursued political efforts in the state of Colorado, I know that there are elections in the state of Colorado where fewer than 400,000 people vote. And they just said, claiming they're going to remove almost 400,000 fake voters. Anyway, this seems like there should be some criminal prosecution. But these are civil lawsuits, and the states are allowed to settle. And allegedly clean up, and there's this many. Well, just forgive me if I don't believe this. I don't trust these people. If you're caught with more fake voters on your rolls than sometimes vote, I think there needs to be a wholesale. I think you need to be thrown in prison. All of your records need to be burned to the ground, and we need to start from scratch because it just seems. But here's the thing is, this seems like it's too big for anyone in the Republican Party to really talk about. It seems so big that the act of settling and paying off a group like Judicial Watch makes the problem go away, and we think that it's been solved, but is it possible that it's too big for Judicial Watch to even? Is Judicial Watch too big to get bought off? I mean, all these settlements come with money. Anyway, color me skeptical, that's all. Color me cynical if you want. That's when it comes to the affairs of this life and the machinations of this world, you can color me all that. I am all that. And that's why I encourage all of you, Franklin Graham there, if he got your attention, crack open a Bible and look in there, because there is where you'll find your hope. Follow the Romans road into at least Ephesians, Colossians, and like that. Or check out our Bible study. We do a Bible study every Wednesday. I put it up on the, as if I have to say that. I'm sure you all know that already. But check it out, because we're trying to be here to help. And so we'll be back next week, or maybe the week after. I might get sick. I might have technical difficulties. I might just get tired of all this, which I do quite often. But we will be back. And until we are, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.